Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And now that Crimea has voted 93% to secede from Ukraine and Russian troops have set up shop there, a curious dynamic is developing between Europe and the United States. The situation is much more relevant to Europe, but they are somewhat more reluctant to respond than the United States is. Here is one of our local U.S. senators who is now involved in this issue, Connecticut Democrat Chris Murphy, speaking yesterday on ABC This Week.
Well, I don't think there's anything that we can do militarily. Clearly, this is a longer-term effort to build up the Ukrainian military. But if on Monday we announce with the European Union a set of crippling sanctions coming after not only individuals but Russian business entities, I think that sends a strong message to Putin. I think he marched into Crimea because he didn't believe that the United States and Europe would actually take a chunk of flesh out of his economy. And if we stand together on Monday, that gives us a chance at least to change the calculus in Moscow.
And so here we are on Monday. How will we know, Senator, if we are standing together?
We have to wait for our European friends to tell us if they're willing to move forward. I mean, there's no doubt that if you cut off Russian gas to Europe, it will hurt. There's no doubt that if you freeze Russian assets in places like Germany and Great Britain, it will hurt them. But this is a threat to the territorial integrity of Europe. Who knows who's next? It was laughable 5 years ago to think that Russia would march on Ukraine. 5 years from now, it may be a NATO country that's in jeopardy.
Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, who's on the Foreign Relations Committee, speaking yesterday on ABC This Week. With me now is Bloomberg News senior foreign policy correspondent Indira Lakshmanan, who's been covering the situation. She is in Vienna right now. Hello from New York, Indira. Thank you for coming on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. So are the U.S. and Europe standing together, as Senator Murphy hoped they would, here on Monday?
Yeah, they're working in concert. They didn't sanction exactly the same groups of individuals, the same particular individuals. The U.S. Today sanctioned seven Russians. And significantly, these are all people who are very close to Vladimir Putin, including the Deputy Prime Minister, Dmitry Rogozin, who is also in charge of the defense portfolio and is a former Russian ambassador to NATO. So that's a very significant one. One of the other people who was sanctioned, interestingly enough, was the woman who was in charge in Russia of the campaign against homosexuals. So we don't know whether that has anything to do with that or it's because she's an advisor to Putin as well on the whole Crimea crisis.
But let me take a step back here for a second, because what we're talking about, what you're describing, is the breaking news this morning, which is sanctions by the U.S. and the EU against some individuals. So President Obama announced sanctions against seven Russian officials. You just named some of them. The EU imposed travel bans, asset freezes, and a couple of other things on 21 individuals linked to Ukraine unrest, and as you're saying, also maybe to the crackdown on gays and lesbians. But that's not a sanction on a country. Going after a handful of individuals, is this all we got?
Well, look, I mean, there is a wide, wide range of what the United States and Europe can do to sanction Russia, and it goes all the way up to full-fledged economic warfare. I mean, under existing powers that the president didn't even have to promulgate, that have existed for decades, there's an International Emergency Economic Powers Act, and the president, various U.S. presidents have enacted this against Libya, against Iran, with respect to a number of countries. So the president could theoretically initiate those powers, and that would allow him to block all Russian banks from the U.S. financial system, to block all credit card transactions with U.S.-owned and operated credit card networks. I mean, it would be very broad, but that's not what the president is doing in the first stage. They, you know, let's keep in mind, Russia is not a major trading partner of the United States. It's only the 11th trading partner, but they are trying. They don't want to get into a full-fledged economic war over this. So they'd like to ratchet it up slowly. And so what this is the first shot across the bow. They have named seven significant Russian political figures as well as four Ukrainian Crimean individuals.
Whoops. Did we lose Indira? Can we get her right back up there? Is she on the line?
Hello, I'm
sorry,
right there.
Sorry, we lost you for 1 second. I think that was on our end. Go ahead. You were talking about the various individuals as the first shot across the bow.
Right, and as well as including 4 Ukrainian Crimean officials. So the point is, I think at this juncture, the White House is trying to signal, look, this could get a lot worse. And they also issued an executive order that gives the Treasury Secretary the power to act against anyone involved in the Russian arms trade, which is huge. And Russia relies on arms sales for, you know, a large part of its economy. So what they're trying to do at this point is show Vladimir Putin what the costs would be of further escalation, of formally annexing Crimea, of moving troops into eastern Ukraine, of doing more than he already has done. What they're trying to do is a stepped-up approach, not, you know, fire all their gunpowder at once, but keep some important things in reserve.
Listeners, what do you want the United States or anyone else to do about the Russia-Ukraine-Crimea situation? 212-433-WNYC. Any Ukrainians listening, you get first dibs. In fact, we'll save some lines for you. If there happen to be any Ukrainians or Crimeans listening this morning, either in Ukraine or Crimea or here in the United States or anywhere else, any Europeans in Europe today or expats here, 212-433-WNYC. What do you want European countries to do? 212-433-9692. For anyone, what response do you want to see, public, to the vote in Crimea and the Russia-Ukraine situation generally? As we speak with Bloomberg News senior foreign policy correspondent Indira Lakshmanan in Vienna, who's been on the story. So, Indira, President Obama says he spoke to Putin on the phone and told him the U.S. would never recognize the secession vote because it took place under duress of Russian military intervention, his words. But most Americans don't realize Crimea was already semi-autonomous from Ukraine and was moving toward Russia anyway. Do you think what the president said in that quote is a fair statement, that this was a coerced majority? Or would this vote have been pretty overwhelming if Putin had just leaned back and said, you choose, either way is fine with me?
That's an interesting question. And I think a lot of even senior U.S. policymakers had publicly said, including Secretary of State John Kerry, had said, look, we all know which way this vote is going to go. It's a preordained conclusion that majority Russian Crimea is going to vote to rejoin Russia. So without any coercion, you can probably safely say that the Russian majority there would have voted for rejoining Russia in any case. But it was interesting, on a White House background call that we had this morning, a senior official said that they already have evidence that in some polling stations, the ballots arrived already pre-filled out. And this official also said that there was more than 100% participation in certain voting stations as well, which would suggest that it was rigged. You know, you do raise a good question. Why even rig it if the votes of the majority Russians living there would go in favor of joining Russia anyway? But it's an interesting case. I mean, Crimea historically has been part of Russia. It was only given by Khrushchev to Ukraine in 1954. A lot of people were bitter and mad about that at the time and have been since. So, you know, the United States officials have recognized themselves that Russia has a big interest in Ukraine, in Crimea, and they recognize that. What they don't want is the precedent of one country going in and invading another in a post-World War II era and just lopping off bits of its territory. And you can understand why, for NATO, as well as the United States, you know, one of its key members, this brought up a lot of memories of, you know, Hitler going into Sudetenland.
Right. But and I know a lot of people are saying this is like Hitler in the 30s. It doesn't mean that Putin's going to become like Hitler in the 40s, but it is like Hitler in the 30s. But nevertheless, there is a big difference between sending in troops to an area that wants to join your country and sending in troops to an area that wouldn't, right?
That's right, of course. Now, the question is he going to make further steps in eastern Ukraine? And there are certainly pockets of eastern Ukraine, separate from the Crimean Peninsula, that are also very pro-Russian. But then it becomes a question of, can you just carve up a state in the post-World War II and post-Cold War, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, can a state go in and sort of carve off pieces for itself? And that's something that Europe wants to stop. Poland is sort of leading the pack on this, leading the charge, but so is Angela Merkel of Germany, and they're very concerned about trying to keep the post-World War II order in Europe. And this is a big worry for them, not only for what would happen in Europe, but the message it would send to all leaders worldwide about what you can do to countries on your border.
And we don't know yet if Putin's going to stop with Crimea and not go into the rest of Ukraine. Here is Senator Murphy on ABC This Week about that.
Well, the mood is tense. Clearly, we're watching events in Crimea. This sham referendum isn't fooling anyone. You see additional troops being mustered by the Russians on the eastern border. But the Ukrainians that we talked to, both government officials and folks who were really the people who drove the Maidan movement in Kyiv, are clear that Ukrainians are not going to go down without a fight, that if Russia really does decide to move beyond Crimea, it is going to be bloody and the fight may be long. And they need help from the United States.
Connecticut Senator, Democrat Chris Murphy, a member of the Foreign Relations Committee on ABC This Week yesterday. And sure enough, Indira, Russia did enter Ukraine over the weekend to seize a natural gas pumping station, as I understand it. Do you know the status of that?
The situation is so fluid. We have numerous reporters on the ground throughout Crimea and Ukraine, and you know they're constantly changing reports of where there are troops. Remember, there was a long time that Putin was not admitting that those troops were actually his. He was claiming that, you know, they were local people who just had somehow all gone out and bought their own matching uniforms. So it's not very clear what he's doing at this point. But yes, he did seem to surround one natural gas facility. And there are also concerns about Ukraine's former nuclear facilities. Remember, in 1994, Ukraine, which at the time had the third largest nuclear weapons stockpile in the world after the U.S. and the Soviet Union, gave up its nuclear weapons in an agreement with the U.S., Russia, and Britain that they would all protect it from all aggression and not invade if it gave up those weapons. So that's been another interesting point because Russia says it no longer has to abide by that because Yanukovych was the duly elected leader and he was ousted, and therefore they don't have any existing agreements with the current government.
Huh.
But that has raised some people in the nuclear proliferation community to worry about the safety and status of former nuclear facilities.
So there's the nukes. And then getting back to that natural gas pumping station, once we're talking about energy resources, I start to think, aha, is that what this is really all about? So how much do you think this is about energy as opposed to Russian identity or power in the abstract, a Russian sphere of influence for the glorification of Putin and the motherland?
Look, I think there's a lot of the glorification of Putin in the motherland. This is a man who said that he thought the worst tragedy of the 20th century was the breakup of the Soviet Union. And he has really been pushing his nationalist credentials and trying to prop up his approval rating through, you know, nationalist actions and sort of greater motherland actions. Russia has plenty of its own oil and natural gas. It's a major importer. And as you know, it's responsible for one-third of Western Europe's imports of natural gas come from Russia. About half of those go through pipelines in Ukraine. So, you know, yes, it may be about controlling resources, but Russia has enough of its own resources. What Ukraine has provided has been a pathway to get those out, exporting them to the West.
Kevin in Lawrenceville, you're on WNYC. Kevin, thank you for calling in.
Hello, good morning. My wife is Ukrainian. She is from the Crimea originally. When I first met her, she introduced herself as Russian. And I always thought that was interesting. I have traveled to the Ukraine several times, Simferopol and Yalta, and I've intermingled with a lot of the locals. My wife's brother is in the Ukrainian army. And so I've been getting a lot of interesting perspective from both the Ukrainian news and the Russian news, and then kind of comparing it to CNN and what's been talked about on NPR, which I think has been great coverage.
So give me your comparison in the other cases.
Well, there's lots of reports in the Russian-speaking news about violence going on in the eastern part of the Ukraine that is being that stems from the Ukrainian nationals. My wife calls them the fascists, and I don't see that being reported at all in the States. But I just think I just feel.
And what is that? Violence by Ukrainian nationalists who don't like Russia against Russian nationals or ethnic Russians who are near the border with Crimea?
Right, yeah. And there's a big belief that a lot of the violence that was going on in Kiev at the time did stem from the Ukrainian fascists. So that to me has not really been discussed much in the American news.
Kevin,
I think your caller brings up a really interesting issue, which is that of completely different coverage that you see in the Russian media sources versus what you see in, the pro-Ukrainian government and Western media sources. And, you know, this is something the Ukrainians who were against Yanukovych and who protested against him included a wide variety of people from sort of pro-European Union, Western-leaning liberals, and also some fascists and some nationalists. So that didn't help the cause. Now, those who are now in the acting leadership positions of the Ukrainian government in Kiev are not the fascists. Those are not the people who took over the government. It's more the Western-leaning liberals, the pro-democracy types. But, you know, that's not to say that some of the extremists were not part of the movement on the streets. Now,
but my understanding is that Putin has been using the extreme actions of these relatively few extremists as a nationalist cudgel and to distort the situation to the Russian people as if it was mostly about the fascists.
And that's all that's been coming out in the Russian media is what we understand. So the Russian-speaking media is getting only one part of the story, and the West, you know, the U.S. government says there's absolutely no evidence of fascists in the government, of fascists acting against Russians in Crimea or against Jews, because there were also reports about anti-Semites. So the U.S. says that this is all invented, that it's completely falsified and being used as a pretext.
And, of course, when you get these kinds of national minority movements, and we remember this if we're old enough from the Balkans after the collapse of the Soviet Empire, that, there are minority groups who are threatened as within populations, minority groups within minority groups. So you get the Russian ethnics in Ukraine who don't like how they're treated with majority Western-leaning Ukraine, and now that's Crimea, and they want to go to Russia. Then you get the Tatars in Crimea who are afraid of what's going to happen to them if Crimea is its own entity or affiliated with Russia. And, it leads down a rabbit hole of smaller and smaller entities that might want to be their own countries. So it's an interesting... It's one of the very fraught dynamics. Anastasia in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Well, I called because I was born in Ukraine and I moved to the United States as a teenager. And for most of my life, I identified as a Russian American because that's how I was brought up, in a Russian family, Russian speaking, Russian school. Ukrainian was always a second language before it became a third after English. And the recent events made me more Ukrainian than I think I've ever been. And I don't want to be an unreasonable person. I don't think United States or Europe can make a huge difference or can make aggressive acts. However, I'm just afraid sanctions such as on 7 people from the U.S. or 21 from Europe will make Russia or anyone in power there, I should say, understand that the world is with Ukraine. I mean, Russia does not understand half steps. They unfortunately laugh at them. It's not... And I hate generalizing, but I mean the Russian government, who I think is losing touch with reality. So that's why I wanted to call in. I just think that I wish there was more support from the West to the more reasonable people in Ukraine, in the Crimea, who have a voice but just don't exercise it right now. Because there's plenty of people in Crimea who may not want to belong to the Ukrainian state where they don't have proper representation. However, there is plenty of people who also understand that becoming part of Russia, they will actually lose a lot of their democratic powers. And there's a lot of noise from the extremist groups, but the people who do understand what this means, they're just not speaking out, and they feel like they cannot make a difference. So I wish there was more support for those people.
So, Anastasia, would you like to see the United States or the EU up the ante here after these sanctions on a few individuals? Would you like to see them do, let's say, one of the things that Senator Murphy mentioned in the clip we played, which is to cut
right.
off Russian gas to Europe, which goes through Ukraine?
Well, I have to say I'm very divided on it within myself, because as a reasonable person, I hate any kind of showmanship or aggression or anything I wish there was a way to sit down and talk. But the problem is any effort from the West remain fruitless. I mean, 5 hours of conversation between Secretary Kerry and Foreign Minister Lavrov, and what has come out? Unfortunately, not much. So if there was a way to sit down with Russia, of course, I think everybody would be for that. The problem is they know they can get away with things right now because the West has to look democratic in this. I mean, we cannot. And I'm sort of identifying more with America right now. I am an American citizen. I'm not going to move back to anywhere in Europe. So I have to think of it as, what do I want as an American? And, yes, I do wish there was more support for democracy, whether it's in Ukraine or anywhere else. And I strongly believe that Putin will not understand half measures. So I think I wish there was an announcement, now we're making this step. If so, such and such doesn't happen, we are making the following steps so that Russia has a clear scale of what's to come.
Consequences. Anastasia, I'm going to leave it there,
yes.
But thank you so much. I really appreciate
you're welcome. Thank you.
You sharing your personal background and you know, level of analysis on this with us. And so let's go back to our guest, Indira Lakshmanan, senior foreign policy correspondent for Bloomberg News. Do you get the sense that there is a kind of escalating ladder of sanctions or other consequences?
There absolutely is. Yeah, there absolutely is. And what Anastasia has said is, you know, in the Obama administration's own, you know, sort of government speak, diplo speak way, they've been trying to do exactly what she has said, which is warn Putin in advance, if you don't back down, then there are going to be costs. Well, he didn't listen, and so the first set of sanctions went out, the travel bans that went out about 10 days ago. Well, then they said there are going to be even more costs if you don't step back. Remember, Secretary Kerry was on Capitol Hill last Wednesday and Thursday saying things could get really ugly really fast. He warned. He said if they go through with this Crimea vote, there will be very serious steps coming on Monday. And now we see it's actually a total of 11 people who've been sanctioned by the U.S. 7 are Russians and 4 Ukrainians, Crimeans, and, you know, double that number from the EU. So I think what they're trying to do is at each stage of the game, and remember the EU and Canada also sanctioned 18 people back on in early March over this. So what they're trying to do is lay out to show Russia each time, like the sanctions I talked about today, where they're saying we can sanction anyone in the arms trade of Russia. They haven't done it yet, but they're sort of signaling. Now, one problem with this kind of signaling, just so listeners are aware, is that you then give a heads up to people who can start moving their assets out of the United States. So this is just something that the Treasury Department always thinks about when they're wanting to sanction and ban people's assets. The more warning you give them, the more time it gives them to move their assets out of the U.S., just so folks are aware of that there are sometimes reasons why they don't lay out absolutely everything they're going to do. But what they are trying to do is give a path here, a sort of flight path of how this could escalate more and more, and also create off-ramps. Saying if you don't take one of these off ramps, it's going to get bad. And as I said at the beginning, you know, the sanctioning authority that the president of the U.S. has could go all the way of complete economic warfare, encirclement of a nation, the way the U.S. and Europe have encircled Iran with sanctions. I don't think it's going to go that far because Russia is far more important to the world economy and diplomatically important. We rely on them for cooperation on the Syria question, removing chemical weapons. We We rely on them for cooperation on trying to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. We rely on them for the Northern Distribution Network to get our troops and supplies in and out of Afghanistan. So there are a number of things for which we need Russia, and that's why I think that the government doesn't want to escalate it too much too fast. But your caller is also right that they need to understand that there are consequences, or else they're just going to continue, you know, doing what he's been doing.
Maria in Berkeley Heights. You're on WNYC. Hi, Maria.
Good morning. I would like to say that I agree with everything that the lady from Bloomberg has said, and I totally agree with Anastasia. I'm a Ukrainian-American. I've grown up in this country my whole life. Recently, I went onto Facebook and onto all this stuff, and I realize that so much of what I read about the situation in Ukraine and in Crimea is just terrible, terrible propaganda. And I think since I read it, now I have a better sense of what not to read, what just is crazy. If the rest of the world is reading this, I imagine it would be hard in many cases to distinguish between reality and total fantasy.
Are you also talking about Putin propaganda regarding fascists in
Russian,
Ukraine?
Yes, that's what I mean. The Russian and Putin propaganda. All these new publications on the internet. Who are they? What are they? And if you hear enough of this kind of thing, you know, we know that if you hear the untruth many times, it starts to become truth.
Maria, what do you want the United States and Europe to do? Do you want to go to war over Crimea?
I'm realistic. I know that America will never, put boots on the ground in Ukraine. However, I think that if Russia goes into Ukraine, we should sell arms to Ukrainians. They should have a fighting chance, because otherwise they will be taken over. We know that Yanukovych and previous people have, previous presidents have pretty well disseminated the Ukrainian army. And that was done kind of on purpose. So I think the least we could do is offer them arms and, and military equipment. So that they could at least fight for themselves.
Maria, thank you so much for your call, and good luck to your family back there, if you still have family back there. And I want to play a clip of President Obama now. This just came out. The president just made a statement a short time ago. This is a minute long. Let's hear how specific he gets, and if he gets specific, about what might happen next.
The international community will continue to stand together to oppose any violations of Ukrainian sovereignty and territorial integrity. And continued Russian military intervention in Ukraine will only deepen Russia's diplomatic isolation and exact a greater toll on the Russian economy. Going forward, we can calibrate our response based on whether Russia chooses to escalate or to de-escalate the situation. Now, I believe there's still a path to resolve this situation diplomatically in a way that addresses the interests of both Russia and Ukraine. That includes Russia pulling its forces in Crimea back to their bases, supporting the deployment of additional international monitors in Ukraine, and engaging in dialogue with the Ukrainian government, which has indicated its openness to pursuing constitutional reform as they move forward towards elections this spring. But throughout this process, we're going to stand firm in our unwavering support for Ukraine.
President Obama, a short time ago. Indira Lakshmanan, senior foreign policy correspondent with Bloomberg News in Vienna. And Indira, I think I heard much more in there about what the United States wants Russia to do than what the United States is prepared to do in response.
Yes, you're right. As we were talking about earlier, the U.S. doesn't want to show all of its cards, although I think anyone who knows anything about sanctions knows exactly how far this can play out. You need look no farther than the example of Iran to see how punishing U.S. financial sanctions can be. They can completely turn state-owned banks into pariahs. They can cut off countries essentially from trade and banking with the rest of the world. As I said, I don't think
We all know the U.S. and the EU don't want to go that far, but that is, if you take it to its logical conclusion, that's how far it could go. I wanted to tell you that there was a really interesting tweet that went out from Dmitry Rogozin, who's the deputy prime minister I referred to in charge of the Russian Defense Ministry, former Russian ambassador to NATO, who's one of the seven Russians the U.S. sanctioned today. And he made a really mocking statement on his Twitter account saying, "Comrade Obama, what will those do who don't have any accounts or assets abroad? Did you think of that?" And he says, "Looks like some joker drafted the executive order of the U.S. president."
Well, there are many many Americans who wish that the federal government had gone after the individuals responsible for the financial crisis instead of just their institutions when we left the individuals alone all these years. So maybe causing individual pain toward people like that tweeter in power, you know, maybe he's reacting with a little more fear about his personal well-being than actual confidence that's implied in that mocking tone,
I
have no way of knowing. But just tell
me. Although it's possible he doesn't have any assets, any United States jurisdiction assets. That's also possible.
Is there daylight, before you go, between the United States and Europe? Because certainly Europe would have a lot more to lose in some kind of economic tit-for-tat sanctions war with Russia than the United States would directly. So is this the U.S. leading diplomatically and trying to bring European nations on board, even though they're the ones who have the much more specific relationships with Eastern Europe and with Russia? Or what would you say?
Yeah, interestingly enough, that is what our analysis was at the beginning. We thought it was the U.S. having to drag along a reluctant EU, and then wham, bam, you know, the EU leaders were talking to Russia and getting more and more frustrated. You had Angela Merkel essentially saying reportedly that Vladimir Putin was completely disconnected from reality. And even though her economy is the one that could stand to lose the most, she actually was able to get German businesses on board in the last 2 weeks with sanctions. And they went from being quite, let's say, modest or meek about what they were going to do to going out full force and, you know, leading the charge on the sanctions before the U.S. even sanctioned any individuals. So that's been interesting. I think Russia, one thing is they've in Western Europe, they've had a mild winter, and they supposedly have more than half a year of stockpiles worth of gas. So that allows them to be perhaps a bit more bold than they might otherwise be about someone who's a major supplier of their gas. But, you know, at this point, it looks like they're working in concert, the U.S. and the EU, and it looks like the EU is pretty gung-ho about sanctions, too, even if all we've seen so far is what you might characterize as sanctions light, not the really hard-hitting stuff yet.
Indira Lakshmanan, senior foreign policy correspondent for Bloomberg News, covering the Crimea vote and its aftermath from Vienna. I think this is not the last step. We're going to talk of this story, huh?
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, pre-K and charter school funding endgame in Albany. We'll get details.